Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast of Lady on Fire, where we explore the filmmaking, themes, and community involved in Celine Sciamma's Portrait of a Lady on Fire. We're your hosts. I'm Laurel Hachinova.
And I am Audrey. Happy New Year, y'all.
Yay.
Oh, my God. We're those sound so sad today. Maybe we always sound sad. Do we always sound sad? Happy New Year, y'all.
I think I do. Allie tells me that I do. Like, even when I'm excited about something, I say it in such a monotone that it's like,
yeah.
She knows that I'm excited, but I think maybe other people might not.
I think I have that problem too. Resting bitch voice. I don't know
voice.
What it is.
Yes. Yeah. RBV.
Yeah. And my face. Yeah. I used to get told to smile all the time.
Yeah. I got an iPhone recently. I switched back from Android.
Congrats.
I don't know. It's fine. I like both OSs.
I have both, so whatever.
Flip back and forth. But anyway, I was making my Memoji, and I was like, oh, that's weird. Why does the default face look so angry? And it's like, oh, it's mimicking me. And I just, like, have a permanent scowl, so... That was enlightening.
Yeah. I have the same problem when I was doing the octopus. It was like frowning a lot.
Yeah. It's like, why are you frowning?
I have to really actively try to smile for things like that to register as like I'm not angry or sad. Whatever.
Cool. Racist. Anyway.
So racist. Oh, yeah. So Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year. If this is an indication of what this year's episodes are going to be like, we're all in for a ride.
Rambly. Annoying.
That's our theme for this
sad.
Year. Rambly and annoying and sad. Inadvertently sad.
It's vertent for me.
Oh, okay.
I'm just kidding. I'm super happy. No. I'm super happy. I can't see you anymore, so I don't even know what's going on with your face. So it has been a little while since we've dipped into ye old mailbag, and that is what we'll be doing today. New year... New old mailbag.
A couple of the usual disclaimers before we dive in. They haven't changed this year.
They've changed a little.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, I added a word.
Let me see if I can find it. I don't know. Neither of us speak French, so as always, apologies in advance for anything we might mess up. We are also assuming you've watched the movie because this episode might have some spoilers if you haven't. And lastly, if we mispronounce your name or username, was it name? Was
that yes. Good job.
Yeah,
oh my God.
Nice. That's great. I
you
did
win.
It. If we pronounce your name or username, we're also very sorry about that. So please correct us. Or also, if you write to us, you can include a pronunciation key for your name, and that kind of helps sometimes. But we'll try our best. We will continue to try. So there you go. Why does that sound? Did it sound like I was staring at my feet when I said that? Because I was.
Anyway. It did. It sounded like you were staring at your feet and like
so
kind
sad.
Of poking a stone with your toe.
Stick in the dirt.
Virtual stone. So before we dive into the mailbag today, we just wanted to say like a heartfelt thank you to everyone who's left us a rating and or review on Apple Podcasts. If you haven't done this but have a spare moment, this actually helps other people find the show.
I think it does help with like the search, right? So if someone searches for Portrait of a Lady on Fire, for example, we might bump up a couple notches in the search because of the ratings.
Right. I don't know exactly how the algorithm works, but that sounds right. And in our quest for total lesbian podcast domination, this is really important. So the way that you would do this, and maybe I'm sure there's other ways to rate us on other platforms, but with Apple Podcasts specifically, if you go into the podcast and you like see all our episodes, you can scroll down. And then there's this like rating and review section on the bottom. And then you can tap to rate us with 1 to 5 stars. Please don't give us 1 star.
Oh my gosh.
Which is great. You don't need to write a lengthy review, but if you feel compelled to write a review, feel free to. But yeah, this is the only time I'm going to plug this today, not in the outro, I promise.
If you are planning on rating us fewer than 5 stars, just email us with your feedback instead.
No.
Or leave a 5-star rating, but then... Go ahead and be really angry in the comments. That's fine. I actually really appreciate it when like people leave that kind of Amazon reviews. It's like, this is a terrible product. I hate it. 5 stars.
I like that more than on Yelp when it's usually the other way around, when it's like 2 stars and it's like, this is one of the best restaurants I've ever been to.
Totally.
And I'm like, do you know how ratings work?
I know. Do you know how much you're hurting this business?
I know. Especially during COVID. Anyway.
Yeah. Ugh.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready for some mailbag?
Oh, okay. I'm ready. It's like, I thought you were just asking if I'm like looking at the right
No, I'm masking anyway, everyone, yeah. But mostly you, because I can't see you. I can't tell how red you are. It's weird.
It sounds like we're recording the podcast in the dark for the first time.
It feels like it, too. All right, let's get started with some mailbag.
Are we ready to open some mail?
Yeah, let's just like, I'm going to put my hand in this big mailbag and pull one out. No, you do it first.
Okay.
My hand got stuck.
All right. So this is how we go through email.
Oh my God. Oh, okay. We print out all of our email and then we mail it to ourselves.
Yeah.
So it feels really genuine. So when we say mailbag, we really mean it.
Yeah. And we have a giant sack that we put it all in, and then we just towed it to each other's houses.
Yes.
Okay, so, and then we also put it in envelopes, which I'm going to open this one now.
We actually record over the course of several weeks because it takes a while for Laurel to bring the mail over here.
Okay, so.
What'd you find?
This one is from Amy. Amy writes, I have always been taken by Marianne's line and manner in which she delivers it about painting men. She says it is in private and it's tolerated. Then she has a kind of raised eyebrow moment of quick grin. To me, she spoke of something else, like even being with a woman. Like it's known, but no one speaks of it. It's also just so beautifully delivered by Noemi. Agreed, but Noemi does a great job. And I can totally see this. It does kind of feel like she's implying a little bit more than what she's actually saying. So I agree with you there. When I've seen the scene, I hadn't thought that she was implying that she had maybe slept with other women. But yeah, I can definitely see that now. And I'm sort of surprised that I didn't think that before. So thank you. Audrey, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say that, if I would interpret that
she's
as like
hinting very quickly that she sleeps with women.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's more just like, hey, it's in secret. So, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
That's how I read it, too, is that like she's not supposed to do it, but she does it anyway because she's a rebel, or, you know, she's grinning because it's something that she's not supposed to do.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to read deeper into that and accept that she is trying to very quickly convey that she sleeps with women and has before and enjoys it. Wink,
yeah,
wink.
I would like to read deeper into it, but I don't see it. I just want to. I want to see it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Same. Laurel, can you bring the mailbag over to me?
Oh, yep. Uh-huh. Hold on. I put it down and now it's...
Oh my God. It sounds like you're rolling out of your closet. Like, what just happened there?
Oh no.
Oh my God.
Okay. I'm going to... open this other compartment of the man. This is getting too cold.
Wait, what is going on? Oh, are you entering another dimension? I see your hand coming through this portal, this vortex in space. Okay, I got it.
Great.
Do you hear that? That's the sound of me getting it. Okay. All right. Oh, okay. This is still from Amy. You type this out on a typewriter. Amazing.
Yeah, that's also why it takes so long. Sometimes I handwrite it, so I just, you know, it's just whatever.
With a quill.
The whim of the day. Yeah, with a quill.
2021 God. Is starting out really weird. Okay, so Amy has another question for us, and it is, I am from California, and English is my first language. Same. Wait, no, that's not true. English is not my first language. I took French in high school. I mean, what the fuck? I did too, because it's gorgeous.
Are you Amy?
Am I Amy? Oh my God, surprise.
Big reveal.
I was trying to figure out how to like get us to answer my questions without seeming super obvious. I know some French and I can hear it. So I've been obsessing over the scene where the Countess and Marianne speak in Italian. They start in French, then Italian, then it seems to go back to French, and then Italian, and then French. I swear I have a life. I'm just fascinated here. We can relate. I am so interested if you have heard anyone else speak of this, or if you have heard Celine speak on why certain lines are in French and certain in Italian. Yeah, I have not personally heard anyone talk about this, including Celine. I tried to like just do a really quick kind of cursory search to see if this has popped up anywhere else, but it didn't show up on my search. I don't know, Laurel, if it did for you.
I have not found anything on it either.
Yeah, I feel like the only time we've discussed it really is when we were talking about the script with Amy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's so much more going back and forth in Italian and French in the screenplay than in the film.
Right.
And I liked what you said in that episode where it's kind of like their secret language, mm-hmm. like Pig Latin. Although in this scene, like this is when we first find out that Marianne kind of surprises the Countess with Italian. Right? I don't think she was right. expecting it. So at this point, it doesn't feel like it's necessarily their secret language. But I do think like, so the Countess is Italian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can we presume that about her?
I would say yes.
Okay.
I'm mostly certain that she is at least from Italy, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think also the actor who plays her is Italian.
Right, yeah.
But I know you're not asking us for an answer, like a response to this and asking if we've heard anything about it. So I'm not going to go like too deep here. Also, I can't. I think what's interesting is the Countess probably has not had an opportunity to speak to anyone in Italian in
oh, that's a great
years,
point.
Right?
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
she says that she hasn't been back to Milan in 20 years.
Ugh,
and so
yeah.
you can see like when Marianne responds in Italian, she just totally lights up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's just so excited and delighted to like be able to speak to someone in probably her, you know, mother tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a weird word, weird phrase to say, mother
yeah,
tongue?
Right, yeah. In her first language.
In her, yeah.
her childhood language, probably.
I also think if you're bilingual or multilingual, going back and forth between the languages can just be a really natural thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I do wonder like how fluent Marianne is in Italian. She might be
yeah,
super fluent,
yeah.
but I wonder if that's part of the reason she might be dipping back and forth, you know, in that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts?
Well, I guess my first question is, and this might just be an aside, but do they really go back and forth that much? I kind of thought it was like Marianne sort of started speaking in Italian and then they continue for a bit and then they switch back to French, I thought, for like the rest of that conversation, that initial one.
I think they go back and forth. If this part matches up with the script, which I think it does, the Countess actually starts in Italian, I think, where she's saying that line, like, you think I don't know her anger. I know it very well, and I know it very well is in Italian, which is an interesting decision because at that point she probably didn't know Marianne understood her, right? So it's like, why is she saying that in Italian? And then Marianne responds in Italian, and that's when the Countess is like, whoa, where did you learn how to speak
really?
In Italian, right? Yeah, and then Marianne says in Milan, and that's in Italian, and then the Countess says this whole thing about how, like, you know, you have to tell her how beautiful it is, basically, like in Milan, and that's in Italian. And then I think they switch back to French, both of them. And then the Countess goes back to Italian. And I don't know if Marianne ever speaks Italian again, but I think the Countess continues to go back and forth a little bit.
Oh, man. I want to review this scene.
Yeah. It's also hard to catch because, again, we don't speak it fluently.
Right, exactly.
So you have to pay a little bit more attention. And I think, you know, the languages, I know they're not, like, obviously identical, but there's some similarities. So it's a little bit harder to parse it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. All right. So let's say that I do. I mean, I was curious about whether or not Marianne had grown up in Italy or Milan specifically, because she knows, it seems like she knows a fair bit about it,
mm-hmm.
and the Countess is like, you should tell her about it. Like, my assumption, the first time I saw it was that she was just trying to not impress the Countess, but sort of. I mean, you know, it's like, if you know that someone speaks another language that you also speak, it's just sort of fun to suddenly be able to talk to that person in that language, and that's part of what she was doing, and just kind of making another connection with the Countess in that
right.
way. Was there another question in there? Because that's kind of all I thought it was, is just like facilitating a closeness.
Yeah. I mean, I think the question is like, why, part of the question at least is like, why are they going back and forth? Not just like, why switch to Italian?
Oh, okay. So this is the other thing, is that I think I would be curious about what they say in Italian versus not. So it's like, are the things that are happier
yeah.
in Italian and like the more administrative business things in French, you know, because that could be part of it. Sort of the way that people will talk about family and friends things in their native language or their original language. And then they'll talk about like boring things in English or whatever. So that could be part of it, but I'd have to go back and double check the subject of the things that they say in Italian versus French.
I think for the most part, that's spot on. I do think that the Countess mostly speaks in Italian when she lights up and talks about how great Milan is, like that's in Italian. I think when she makes that joke about how like it'll be hard to paint my friend because she's super ugly.
Right.
I think that's in Italian. The rest of it, most of it is in French, and that is more administrative stuff, like you're saying, like, or logistical stuff where she's talking about like, oh, I'm leaving at the same time as you, so blah blah blah. I think that's in French. So yeah, I think your theory could be spot on. it's harder to say for Marianne, like, why she doesn't switch around so much. That might be, like, a technical limitation.
Right, right.
I don't know if Noemi actually speaks Italian, so, yeah, who knows why Marianne didn't, like, stick to it. But it could be, like, just the character. Maybe she didn't speak it as fluently as the Countess, you know?
Also, I don't know if I said that this was, like, the first meeting, but it looks like she doesn't start speaking Italian until this, the second meeting that they have.
Yep.
Right, okay, good.
That's right. And this is the second one where I think it's a little bit more casual. They're, like, sitting down and mm-hmm. I think it gets, like, more intimate more quickly because they're talking about Eloise and her anger.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's, like, kind of a different dynamic at this point.
Yeah. Hope that helps. I don't know.
If anyone else has heard anything about this, like, heard anything from, like, Celine or, you know, personally, if she's told you why she chose to do this, let us know and we will update.
Oh, do you want to pass the bag back?
Oh, you handed me the whole bag? I thought you just handed me Amy's. Yeah.
Oh, no, you're right. Hold on. I have it here. Silly me. Okay. So let me grab this one. So here we have an electronic mail from...
Oh, my God.
From Billy, who writes... Oh, no. So here's some French. In the tableau de... In the stunt credits, they list Cecilia Ngo and Sybille Blouin, maybe? Apologies. We apologized in advance. If Cecilia is the person who jumps into the water from the boat, who is Sybille?
Sybille Blouin. Yeah, something like that.
Sorry. Sybille Blouin. It's funny how we apologize in advance and then we continually apologize even after we say it.
I mean, it's just, like, embarrassing. I mean, not for you. Yeah. Just a general feeling. I'm not embarrassed about it.
No, no.
Anyway.
It's embarrassing for me. So who is Sybille? Is she Sophie falling from the ceiling? So I think we may have touched on this during one of the 28 Things episodes, but we think that Sybille is actually the person who steps into the ocean when Eloise decides she wants to bathe. We had discussed the possibility of Adele needing a stunt double, like when she runs towards the cliff, because that
right.
looks pretty intense. But if you look at the close up of, like, her hair and basically it's mostly, like, her hair and her ear, they look exactly the same, which would be very, very difficult to, you know, reproduce on a stunt double. But then if you look at when she's going into the ocean, which is, you know, pretty choppy waters and probably very, very cold, it looks like that could be a body double, possibly. I don't think that she is a stunt double for Sophie for a number of reasons. One, if you look at a photo of her, she's blonde. I think she's relatively tall. I don't think that she would be a great fit for a stunt double for Luana.
Although I guess you don't really, you just see dangling legs and then, like, a
right,
falling
right,
sound,
yeah.
So maybe, but.
But then yeah. even then, like, you see Luana climb up, right, and then hang in that position.
That's true.
And you don't actually see anybody fall.
No.
So I think that's just Foley, yeah. Foley sounds and not a person.
Kind of like what we're doing with Mail. JK is real Mail.
What?
sorry.
You're not actually. I've been reading paper letters this whole time.
Paper letters. Paper letters, you say.
I'm just holding, like, all of my junk mail.
I've been reading from, you know, letters etched in stone. So
right. Oh, do we have anything else on that one?
No, I think just if you want to check out that scene, which I feel like we're not the only people who have mentioned this before, but it's around 47 minutes. So Eloise is facing the water and she's, like, disrobing, not quite in the water. And then they cut to Marianne, who's looking at her kind of like, oh, God, I effed up. And then they cut back to Eloise in the water. And I think, like, when she's actually in the water, my theory, in our theory, everyone's theory, is that that's the stunt double. And I think other people pointed out she looks, like, a little bit different. It's hard to say because mm-hmm. it's, like, kind of an extreme long shot. So it's kind of hard to
her
tell.
Her hair looks a little bit lighter to me.
Yeah, she's probably right, wearing yeah. a wig.
You think so? She's all, I mean, like, she is blonde.
She is a blonde, it seems like, in her LinkedIn profile.
Right, yeah.
Which is what comes up when you Google her.
Did you add her on LinkedIn? I added her.
I did. Yeah, we're friends now. Yeah. We're actually coworkers.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's so nice.
She's doing my stunts right now. So, yes.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to pull an audio file out of the mailbag? How does this work?
No.
No. God, wow.
No. I have a mini cassette.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Hold on, let me rewind. So we got a voice message, an audio message from Shayna. Okay, let me just rewind and play that for you for my Walkman.
From your Talk Boy?
What's a Talk Boy? Is that a Sony thing?
It's the thing from Home Alone 2 or something. That like handheld recorder that he would, never mind. I wanted one so bad at the time.
Hello, this is Shayna Loves Food. Just calling to share my appreciation for you both and for keeping up with this podcast. I know it is a lot of work and a labor of love, and I don't have any other friends that I talk to about Portrait, so it's very appreciated, and I love listening every Friday. But the question I wanted to ask you is there a character you resonate with more or the most in the Portrait universe? At least that's, I like to insert myself into stories. So just curious if you guys have thought about that. But anyway, keep it up and thank you so much.
Thanks, Shayna.
Thanks, Shayna.
There was an interesting kind of blip in the middle of that.
Yeah, it sounded like you were rewinding or fast forwarding.
It's strangely part of the original audio file. But anyway, Shayna, thank you so much. We appreciate you. I feel like my friends won't talk to me about Portrait anymore, so this is definitely the outlet for all of us. Well, I don't know. Maybe Laurel has a ton of friends that she likes to talk to about Portrait.
No, there's no one.
There's no one.
This is it. It's all of you. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Okay, so Shayna asks, are there any characters in the film that resonate with us or that we relate to?
I relate most to the boat guy because
I was gonna say that too.
I'm just following fascinating, beautiful women around, and they are appalled when I'm present. So
oh my god, they just are, like, jump scare every time they see you.
No, god, no. Okay, actually, I hadn't thought about it until you asked this question, Shayna. So there was nobody that I naturally found myself like relating to, as you do, like putting myself in the film at all. After some thought, though, it would be Marianne, because I feel like my educational background was super traditional. It was good, but it continually feels like there's so much that I have to relearn constantly. So I feel like my mind is blown as her mind was blown over and over again by people like Eloise. So in that sense, I feel a sort of kinship to her.
That's a great answer.
Thanks.
I'm serious. Yeah, I'm on your boat. Your boat dedics are both boat dudes. I also did not put myself in... I was actually thinking about this a lot last time. Like, I was trying to think of a film where I'm like, oh my god, this person is me.
Mm, yeah.
And I kind of felt that way about Old Dolio in Cajillion.
Yeah.
Yay. I was like, there's something about this character that I relate to so deeply.
Yeah.
Whatever is the like non-gross cultural appropriation of like spirit animal, they are kind of my person.
You're familiar? I don't know.
My familiar? Yes, sure.
I don't know.
So yeah, I'm in your boat here where I don't think I put myself in anyone's shoes, except maybe the abortionist. Oh, like I do relate to her in a sense. I feel like I'm often mixing stuff together to help people out of sticky situations.
Nice. Wow, yeah, that's great.
Out of Marianne and Eloise, like I think there are definitely aspects of both of the characters that I relate to, but no one like as a whole. Maybe a little bit more Eloise, unlike you and Marianne. I don't have a traditional background in education, and I am
a nun,
and I'm also committed to marry someone that I don't want to. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh,
that
God.
Is not the case. I also don't blink when I'm annoyed. I can definitely relate to that. Oh, you know what I do? What really resonated with me, and this is not unique to me at all, but this whole idea of equality in a relationship, that made me feel more seen than probably anything else. And then on top of that, like this message of love doesn't have to be like the final, like end all of everything. I think our culture makes it seem like coupledom or like romantic love is sort of held as this like ultimate goal that we should achieve. And I think this is another perspective where it's like you can have this intense love and it can still have meaning for you afterwards. And you can both, or however many people are in your relationship, grow from that experience, you know? I think that unconventional lens and like the egalitarianism, I guess, of this film is really like what resonated with me more than the actual characters themselves.
Yeah, I'd agree with that too.
But great question.
I would like to hear, who or what resonated with everyone else too. That'd be interesting.
It's such a limited cast.
Which you have like five options.
Like, yeah.
I was also thinking like, oh, maybe I kind of resonate with that guy at the end who was explaining Marianne's painting to her because I'm small and I think I know a lot. So.
Oh my God, it's so true.
Hey.
You like ask questions, but you really just wanted to say like what your answer is.
No, that's my that's totally my MO. It's like, oh, did you do this? Let me tell you about it.
Yeah. All right, okay. Moving on. We have one more paper mail.
Oh, yeah. I got it, yeah.
You got it. You still have the bag, so.
I do, you're right. All right, so we've got this one. Oh, it came from Instagram.
Wow, this sounds like a really floppy yeah. paper.
The floppiest papers come from Instagram. So this one's from Kaisan. Kaisan says, I would love some book recommendations. I read When Brooklyn Was Queer and absolutely loved it. That's great. I'm so glad that you read that. I love that too. And if I didn't point that out last time, that was a recommendation to me from Audrey. So thank you for that recommendation.
Oh, thank you.
Do we have other recommendations?
Yeah, I have some kind of couple in a similar vein. And then I have a few queer graphic novels would recommend.
Nice, yeah.
Or queer-ish. These are kind of like a starting pack. So I don't know if y'all are into graphic novels or comics, but this is what I'm going to start with. So the first one is Woman World by Aminder Dhaliwal, who I think now is like the lead of Disney TV animation. Anyway,
wow.
It started off as a web series of comics, and then it was collected and then added to like in this book called Woman World. And it's basically about like this birth defect that wipes out the planet's entire population of men. And it follows like this group of women in the aftermath where they're rebuilding civilization. And hopefully this is not too much of a spoiler, but they create this flag and it's called Beyonce's Thighs. I feel like that's all you need to know. But it's really good. So she's the illustrator and the author, and it's really beautiful. And then another graphic novel is called Spinning by Tilly Walden.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah, another sort of indie publication. It's a coming of age story about the author's childhood as a competitive figure skater. And Tilly is queer, and I think they wrote this when they were 19. It's not like my favorite read, but it's like I would still recommend it because it's beautifully done.
Yeah.
And then another graphic novel, which I mentioned on other episodes, is called Fun Home, which was turned into a musical. So you may have read it already because it's very popular. But that, I mean, it came out in like the late 90s. It's by Alison Bechdel, who you might know because that's why there's the Bechdel test. She was also the author of the comic strip Dykes to Watch Out For. I think there was like a dialogue in there that the Bechdel test spun out of, if I remember correctly. And Fun Home, which is also a memoir, is about her childhood and relationship with her father, who's a closeted gay man who runs a funeral home. And she's written other stuff since then, but I feel like this is probably some of her best work. And then like two other pieces of, you know, classic lesbian literature, if you haven't read already, include Tipping the Velvet by Sarah Waters and also Fingersmith by Sarah Waters. And Fingersmith was adapted into the movie The Handmaiden by Park Chan-wook, which you might have seen. Tipping the Velvet was also adapted into a TV series. I really love Tipping the Velvet. Fingersmith, not as much, but I would recommend both of them anyway. They're both historical fiction. And then two other quick recommendations actually coming from my partner, Heather. The first one is called Odd Girls and Twilight Lovers by Lillian Faderman. It's this nonfiction, a history of lesbian life in 20th century America. So I just started reading this one myself. It's a little dry so far, but if you're looking for something closer to when Brooklyn was queer, this might be a good rec. Unsurprisingly, it's mostly centered on like white lesbians, unfortunately, but I think that's just kind of like what we have in terms of historical record. But another recommendation is called Wayward Lives, Beautiful Experiments by Sadia Hartman. This is also nonfiction and a history of young black women in the 20th century. It's not all queer women, but there's a chapter dedicated to Mabel Hampton, who was a lesbian activist and dancer during the Harlem Renaissance in the 1920s. So those are my book recs. I'm sure I'll have more at some point later. Do you want to add anything to that? Sorry,
I'm good. Thanks. Rambled. That was great.
Okay, cool. Bye.
I would also add, I think Tilly Walden's more recent one called On a Sunbeam is available as a graphic novel, but you can also just go to onasunbeam.com, and I believe it's still free to read as a webcomic, which is amazing. It's pretty epic in length, but it's really good. And yep, that is still available, so that's cool. If you are looking for some recommendations that aren't necessarily queer, some of the stuff that I've enjoyed this year were Trick Mirror by Gia Tolentino. I found really entertaining. It's a collection of essays that she wrote. She's a regular columnist for a bunch of publications, but this was her first collection of essays. And she has one in there that is about her upbringing in a very sort of like religious conservative. She grew up in a church, basically, and her experiences there very much mirror my own. So I found that to be very cathartic.
Wow.
There's also What Can a Body Do, which is by Sarah Hendren. And that is a better perspective, I think, on living with disabilities than I've ever seen. And the structure for the book is really interesting. She goes from like small and personal, like objects, basically, and then moves the lens larger, so like zooms out a bit. So you like look at rooms and buildings and then zooms out to like cities. And then she ends with like looking at time from the perspective of someone with disabilities. So I thought that was fascinating and really well done. And then I'll just throw in one more, but one that I'm reading now, so I can't say.
What if it ends up horribly?
If it ends horribly, I'm sorry, but so far it's fantastic. It's called Cast.
Ooh, yes.
And it's by Isabel Wilkerson. So like if you have thought, for example, about how unfair India's caste system might be, it's a harsh look at our own. So I highly recommend the first half of it. But yeah, those would be mine.
Great recommendations. I think we need to link to these in our show notes.
And we will. Yes, these will be linked to in our show notes.
We need like a portrait book club.
Aww. I mean, I say that now, but I can never read along with other people on a schedule. I jump around a lot.
Really?
Yeah. Like I'll jump.
Like physically?
Yeah,
or
I do
like...
jump. I just hop on one foot the whole time. Yeah, it's like, oh, I can't do this.
It's like, Laurel, you're really distracting us. Like, stop. You jump around within the book or like from
book
other
to
book. Books?
Yeah,
like you're reading multiple like, books at the same time?
Yeah. So I'll kind of like if I dive into a book for something specific, I'll get that very specific thing out of it. And then I'll jump into something else sometimes. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I think Heather does something similar. She will read like 20 books at the same time.
Yeah,
and she's
exactly.
Like surrounded by books.
Yes.
I think she usually finishes them, but it's definitely, I don't know if I can hold that many stories in my head at the same time. Like I try to just read one and finish it, but like maybe I'll bounce around between like three.
Yeah, I don't often read fiction, so maybe that helps because it's all just like separate concepts.
Yeah, same with her. That's true. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I've also kind of gotten to the point where I don't feel obligated to finish books. So
can you help me? Can you help me reach that point?
Time is limited and life is short, and there are so many books out there.
Okay.
You can, yeah, that's what I tell myself is that like. There are other things that are probably worth my time more if this isn't resonating with me.
Next time I'm in that position, which seems to happen a lot, I'm going to message you and be like, please tell
down.
Me to stop reading
Close
this.
It, put it down.
I was just reading this like bad sci-fi called The Expanse. Oh. I think it's the same one that they adapted into the TV series.
No.
But it's so sexist and like, and there's no excuse. It was like, it wasn't written that long ago. And it's so gross the way that like the female characters were in it. But I'm like, I'm already 50% in this. I need to finish.
Cut bait.
I know. And there was no good payoff. And so I was so mad at myself the whole time. It was just like this weird masochistic
thing. Stop hitting yourself. Speaking of which, okay, another recommendation that I would make since we're on sci-fi is, have you read The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet?
I haven't.
I like that one a lot.
I will. Let me add that to my list because I love sci-fi. So
yeah, I think the story is interesting and the way, so Becky Chambers, I think, is the author. And she does some very interesting things with like gender and artificial intelligence and world building. Yeah, I thought it was really fun.
Excellent. Everyone, this is your 2021 reading list. You could read them all at once.
Yeah, book club starts now. I'm not participating. Have fun. Bye.
So I don't have any more recommendations, but I can tell you what's next up on my list as we wrap up.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Been meaning to read Pale Horse, Pale Rider. I think there's like three sort of novellas in one. And the last one, which is actually called Pale Horse, Pale Rider, I think it was written in like the 30s. It's about the 1918 flu. I'm really excited about that. And for some reason, I'm reading The Golden Compass right now.
I don't know why.
Or whatever it's called, His Dark Materials.
Yeah, yeah. Have you watched the series at all?
I watched one episode and I was like, I really don't like this. I need to read the book because I think I'll appreciate it more.
Yeah.
Did you read it when it came out?
I read the first in the series. I don't think I'd read either of the other two. Is it a trilogy?
I think it is a trilogy. Yeah. Yeah. I also have my list, The Skies Belong to Us, which is all about like the golden age of plane hijacking.
Wow. Okay.
Where I'm like, I didn't know there was a golden age, but apparently there was a period of time where it was very easy to hijack a plane. So I'll let you know how that goes. But if other people have queer book recommendations or just book recommendations in general, share them.
Yeah, please do.
Maybe we could get like a spreadsheet going with portrait recommendations.
Yeah, that would be nice if someone wants to do that.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
All right.
And that is our show. Thank you for joining us. Did we leave anything out? Do you have any burning questions for future episodes? Let us know.
You can email us at podcastofaladyonfire@gmail.com, and you can find us on Instagram at podcastofaladyonfire, or you can also find us on Twitter at POALOFpodcast.
Thank you for listening. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.